Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo back home in the Pacific Northwest. But today, now here in the Pacific Northwest, we have storms that have been coming in one right after the other. The leaves are almost totally taken off of all the trees and the rain has been pummeling down. Well, my guest today is in a tropical paradise. She's on the big island of Hawaii. Her name is Mars Cavers. We are going to be talking about a fascinating book that her husband actually wrote, and he has passed away. The book is titled, When the Stars Win the Sunshine. Stars Win the Sunshine. Mars, welcome to the show, and aloha.
Aloha, Donna. Glad to be with you.
This book, and I mentioned this to you, when I first got it, I thought, I wonder about this book. I mean, after all, it starts off in the very first paragraph where your husband, Wayne Steyer, says, I'm beginning to see that whatever happens in my life, your life, and everybody's life, is part of a cosmic plan in which we are participants if we choose to be. One can see the plan more clearly if one looks upon one's life as a myth. I found that he was an absolutely captivating writer, and we're going to be talking about the material that he had in here. But, Mars, I want to know about you. When did your husband, Wayne, pass?
About a year and a half ago.
And how did the two of you manage to get together? Your name fascinates me. I've never met a woman named Mars.
It's a new one for most people, and I enjoy the response because of the concept of being fierce, and that's certainly not what I would call myself, except in some aspects. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a book title that says women are from Venus and men are from Mars, so you're having the name Mars. It's just absolutely captivating.
Well, Wayne and I started writing way back in the early days, shall we say, when we were in our 20s. And that's what felt like who I was. And I have stayed with it ever since. I am Mars.
You are Mars. Wow. The name does have a powerful connotation. But let's talk about your husband also for a moment, because he was an actor, a writer, a sculptor. He was a humorist. He was a teacher. Obviously, your husband. He traveled all around the world, and I loved his sense of humor. He has a very dry sense of humor. But he traveled all over the world, and in this book, he talks about his experiences with various cultures. And he really had a mission in life, and it was to be aware of where he was, what he saw, who he met, and to be mindfully present with whatever he was involved with, and he was successful at writing. But his life went through all kinds of loop-de-loops. Now, did those loop-de-loops happen more before the two of you got married, or did they happen before as well as after you got married?
I would say it was a continual, yes, it just continued all the way through to his last breath. Wayne was comfortable being in the present moment more than hardly anybody I've ever met before. We could be in some very, very uncomfortable places, and he would just melt, if you will, into dealing with whatever was coming forth. And as far as his way of growing through that and understanding it himself better, that came through his writing from earlier books, and the culmination is in Stars When the Sun Shines.
He has some wonderful phrases in his book. Thinking inside the mirror. Now, that brings up all kinds of images. One has a difficult time of even wrapping their mind around thinking inside a mirror, yet it creates a whole different thought patterning in your head. Also, I found it fascinating that his name, Wayne Steyer, and the Star of Gladness in Hawaiian culture is the same. Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit of background on that.
I want to start with what you just said, that the what it does to your brain when you're trying to deal with some of those phrases. And Wayne didn't settle with language as the cliche world that we usually speak with and write with. Therefore, he could go to those images that stretch you, make you pop out of your normal way of thinking, and not only keep you captivated with his writing, but stretch whatever you're trying to digest about your own life. The Star of Gladness is a representative for Hawaii of how they got here, that there was a energy guiding them from the images of what brings you across an ocean to a new land. And many writers have shared their view of that in the lore of Hawaiian migration or Polynesian migration. Wayne, again, tuned in with why is he on this land? What brought him here? What made him part of Hawaii and a place to end his life as well?
There was a word I had never, ever heard of before, and I don't know if my listeners have either. Solipsism?
Solipsism?
Solipsism.
Yes.
What a word. Now, explain that one. That one was really, I thought, whoa, is that in the dictionary? I couldn't find it.
You couldn't? My
no,
gosh.
I'd maybe had an older dictionary.
Yeah. Well, not only that, let's take a look at what goes on in dictionaries. Lots of language is screened out.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened with our English language dominance in the world is we're neglecting the richness of many, many, many other languages. I personally, and Wayne as well, couldn't live without a dozen dictionaries because there's so much filtered out.
Mm-hmm.
Solipsism was a secondhand word that Wayne would use easily because he was a philosophy major. And he really ate it up, the history of philosophy. Right now, I'm in the same vein of thought, that if we don't see what thoughts came from and how those thoughts got handed on to us, how are we going to know why we live the pattern we live? I'm opening up a huge avenue, which is what Wayne always did too, that you see all these threads and how they come through to what we, quote, call modern times. The word modern is pretty funny, actually.
How so?
So many things have been as modern, if not more modern, thousands of years ago.
Oh, that's true. All you have
you
to
know,
do is be, yeah, it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, a lot has been forgotten for all different kinds of reasons. And solipsism, the concept of being able to have a tight philosophy where you are the center of everything, is just simply one way that some people think.
Very good point. And I have to say, having been in New York, which is just like the metropolis of humanity from all over the world, when you're sitting in a McDonald's with an ice cream cone and talking to a woman from Paris that has come over because it's cheaper for her to fly over and shop in New York than it is in Paris. It really is an experience to have a conversation with someone from an entirely different culture, and originally she came from Africa. So, I mean, what you're saying about language and the cultural connections and the threads that we have from our ancestors and what's going on today. It truly is a phenomenal tapestry of magnificence as far as I can see. It just is amazing, the variables we have. Now, your husband had a tumor in a testicle, and it was malignant and it was removed. But there was almost at that time when he was going through it, and correct me if I'm wrong, an awareness that this is something that could affect the rest of his body.
That was a time when cancer was basically one of the biggest scare words out there, and I don't know that that disappeared. But when doctors come back to you after a pretty major operation, removing as many lymph nodes as they possibly could, then, and they say, well, this is 50-50. And Wayne spent a lot of time looking at that marvelous communication called 50-50. Like, what the heck is that?
Mm-hmm.
That tells you nothing. 50-50 is a nothing answer.
That's true.
You have no leanings whatsoever. So he actually took that from a philosophical point of view and said, I'm living on the blade's edge, but aren't we all?
Absolutely.
Nevertheless, he knew he was living on the blade's edge.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, let's look at how I can proceed every single day living on the blade's edge. And go.
I loved his story about being in the hospital when all of this was going on. And, of course, it's very, very overwhelming. And like you said, at the time that it happened with him, they really didn't have very many options to work with. And he meets this old man who calls him over. And your husband said, oh, I was complaining. I had 5 days I had to be in the hospital, and he was going on and on. And he stopped and asked the old man how he was doing. And the old man said, I'm fine. And he said, how long have you been here? And he said, I've been in and out of the hospital for 28 years.
Isn't that awesome?
That just blew your husband away. I love that story. I mean, perspective shift. This is a big aha.
So that was given to him to learn from when he was like 16 years old, that he was feeling bad, that he had a little bit of a football injury, and this man had faced something that was so gargantuan, having his life restricted and wasn't going to be playing any sports ever. And I think Wayne really took that to heart. I think the old man and Wayne had a very deep connection right then.
Mm-hmm. What an incredible shift of perspective, though. Now we'll get into our pity pots, and then someone will say, well, I've had this happen to me, or I don't have any family. I mean, it's amazing. We never know what's gone on in another person's space, and I think that it's very humbling and brings us to a point of reality. And I love the way he writes. I absolutely love it. What really made me chuckle was when he was talking about Japan. I mean, I was just going through this, and this was in the 70s when he was over there. And he said, in Japan, the word for different is the same as for wrong. And he brings out all of these various cultural aspects that I thought were just absolutely amazing. Give us some information on what got Wayne over there and how long he was in Japan.
Okay, we lived in Japan two different times, and the first time was a short side of, was it a year, 2 years? And then the second time was over 6 years, intending to stay for one, and ended up being six. Coming out of college, and you get your first teaching job, and you go, okay, this is all fine and good, but there's got to be more, because the energy was, we want to know, we want to learn, we want to experience. And luckily, both of us took the philosophy that when you've got the energy, go for it. You don't know what it's going to be like way down the line. So it was an easy move to accept a position teaching in Japan and then find out what another culture is like. Having not even been near an ocean, much less to a foreign residence prior to that, it was a great expansion by fire.
By
dropping down out of the plane, and there you go. In fact, the first day we were met by a Canadian who was leaving the country, offered us to rent his place that, in a sense, it was being passed on to another teacher, which the landlord appreciated. And then the next day we had to find our way to work all the way across the city of Tokyo. And in 1976, nothing was translated. Nothing. There wasn't even a McDonald's to have some familiarity with.
Yes, the world was quite different then.
So we found our way to work, but we didn't have the foggiest how to get back home at the end of the day. But that all got worked out. You just did it.
One of the things that was brought forth, and of course, this was back in the 70s, I believe, and we have to remember Japan's much different today, so take that in context, those of you that are listening. And I'm reading here, in those days in Japan, it was common for men to use the sidewalks at night or the bushes during the day. And this is not condoned, and yet it is impolite to notice someone being so rude. It's amazing, the things that you'll experience. I remember when someone was talking to me about going to China, and this was back in the 80s, I said, oh, you don't want to go there. And they started describing all kinds of things that were done. And when you haven't been in certain environments, it really is, it's just like, is this for real? Is this for real? So he saw all kinds of things. He talked about cultural invisibility. And it just is fascinating about what he went through. And he said the first 6 months, Tokyo was a Salvador Dali waltzing a tango with Disney World.
Pretty good description. Totally true.
I read that and I went, okay, I've seen a lot of Salvador Dali's work, so that gives me a clear idea of just utter, total chaos.
Yes.
But there was a method to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, and he also talks about his first party in Tokyo, by his undergrad. You've got to tell us about that one.
It's probably my least favorite.
Okay, her least favorite. All right.
But yeah, because there are so many wonderful stories. I mean, it's my least favorite because the parties were pretty much what a great deal of life was like. It was way over the top, that after you spent a semester teaching, there was a huge amount of celebration going on. And that just simply meant, you know, 2-4 hours with beer and whiskey and some food, thank God. And at the end of the evening, Wayne was assigned to help one of the students get home because she certainly didn't know which direction was front. And he had another teacher, a wonderful woman I wish I could reach right now, woman from Texas, whom I believe is living in England. And they were in the taxi, and Melissa was much more linguistically prepared for living in Japan. She had studied Japanese. So they're working their way through this address problem and getting her home. And the embarrassing part was Wayne's Japanese was so minuscule. And I'll add a little bit in here that's not in any book, that Wayne and I, before we went to Japan, started to study the language from U.S. military records. And
oh, my.
Consequently, we learned very poor Japanese because it was with a total American accent. Anyway, Wayne was trying to use these phrases that were basic functional phrases, and they were inappropriate for the situation. He gets the girl to the door where they rang the doorbell and her mother came, and she sees these two Western teachers with her daughter slumped over. And both Wayne and Melissa were very tall, which is an added contrast. And so all Wayne could say was, thank you, which was not appropriate for the situation at all.
No kidding. Oh, my goodness.
Giving a rather drunken daughter to her mother and saying, domo arigato.
Oh, wow. Did the girl come back with any unique stories to tell about how her mother responded?
I don't recall. I don't remember if there was an added element to that story with the next semester.
You have no idea. He had the opportunity to participate in Japanese theater. And it's incredibly powerful, and the actors in the theater, males, often play the roles of women, and he met an anagata. Tell us what an anagata is, and the famous Thomas Aburo. I may be mispronouncing it, but I would love you to share that story with my audience, because it gives a picture of culture that often we don't see.
It's onagata, and that's the man who becomes very, very well trained to perform like a woman to the point where you believe. And, of course, that's what theater is about, that this is carried very, very fine skill. And that was a side experience from Wayne's affiliation with the traditional Japanese theater. And once you end up in a milieu of people who are in theater, all the different people kind of know each other. Therefore, you get tickets to all the different stages and invited in the back of the stage to meet the actors and so on. And you could see with mask on and with mask off. So to see the male actor back into his street clothes, the jeans and the T-shirt, after you had just seen him perform this gorgeous woman in flowing robes on stage, is to see the inside and the outside of a performer, and it was thrilling.
He talked about how amazing it was to experience the theater, and he was actually trained and performed in the theater on stage himself. Give us a little bit of background about that.
Okay, Kyogen is one type of Japanese theater, and it's if you go to see a whole day of theater, there are the what you might call prose parts and the poetic parts. And Kyogen is more the story of what happened to the man on the street, only if you put it in ancient Japanese imagery, it would be the man in the rice field or the woman. And those stories would be what happened to the laborer in relationship to his employer and the people who would own the land. And those stories became a little more bawdy, a little more silly and playful and challenging, whereas the prose story was more regal about royalty. So, of course, that was perfect for Wayne, to learn how to be the voice of the man in the rice field who's saying, hey, look, things aren't going too well for me. I really need a different relationship with my employer here. It's not very comfortable, etc. And he learned and translated many, many, many plays which had not yet been translated in the Kyogen field of theater. And thank you to the family that adopted him to bring him into very severe training. It was very hard on his body. It was easy for him because Wayne's a good memorizer, but physically it was grueling.
Yes, and that is a very important point. It's very, very demanding. I want to skip to a section where he said, I've developed the habit over the years that when I'm feeling depressed and having existential questions about my self-worth, I force myself to go to a mirror and sit there at myself in disgust. I mean, I try to hate me. Depending on how down I am on me, in a short while, I find myself laughing at that ridiculous face. He really became very much aware that he couldn't take himself too seriously. I think that's why I enjoyed his humor throughout the book so much.
I think when Wayne looked in a mirror, it was different than when you, in a cliche mind, look in a mirror. He looked beyond the mirror. The mirror, of course, we understand what that word means, but it can also signify looking in deep. And I think, and it had nothing so much to do with his own face as far as what one face is, but the archetypal face, the archetypal I can't pronounce it now, the archetype of a person.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw humanity, and he saw that humanity has come through eons of struggle and learning and hopefully expanding and raising itself. A lot of love there.
He loved to travel, and he said he liked to travel as much as possible without a plan. Now, for me, I'm one of these people that likes to organize. I want to know when the plane's landing. I want to know where I'm going. But he was just the opposite. He didn't have a schedule. He always had a map. He said he had a map to dream on and chance as his guide. He lived on the edge, tightrope, walking without a net, no support group, gambling his limited money reservoir a few more months on the road, at times without a home, no shared culture or language, on his own. And he had to pay attention at all times to be able to survive this kind of a traveling modality. But he said he felt alive and life was exciting in every moment. He said he was the movie. Life became a traveling celebration. How many people would be so much richer if they could look at life as traveling through experiences and to celebrate the experiences, good, bad, and indifferent? What a phenomenal philosopher he is.
I think this is a kind of bungee jumping. When you travel like that,
mm-hmm.
without any kind of backup, and it actually creates a kind of euphoria, an adrenaline rush. But you can't stay at that adrenaline rush level all the time. You actually get used to it. And it's quite wonderful to realize what occurs when you have no idea what's going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it, any of us can do it for just an hour a day or a half an hour a day. And you do it when you go to a new spot in your city or anything new, a new restaurant. Your antennas go up higher. And for that brief time, you are necessarily taking in everything new. But Wayne stayed there very comfortably at
mm-hmm.
that level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, he really enjoyed it. And you were not with him on all of his trips, were you?
Yes, I was mostly.
Oh, you were?
For,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The exceptions were when he went deep into the Ulu, the jungle in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
I got close, but I bowed out on one of the long trekking trips. I didn't stay as long in Borneo as he did, and I missed Egypt because I got very ill.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, yes, we did some awesome travel.
Well, I just think it's incredible. I liked his attitude. He was talking that he would go into a town with a simple plan. What he would do is just sit down and get himself some tea and a snack, and he said he'd watch a story unfold in front of him. Now, if we did this on a regular basis ourselves, our lives would really be amazing, or even just did it once a week. Because he said inevitably the person next to him would turn out to be a shadow puppet master, a museum curator, maybe a historian. Maybe they could guide you to a hidden temple. He just was so open. And that's what I loved about the book. He wrote it in a way where you feel like you are traveling with him through these experiences, and all of a sudden you have these remarks about different cultural environments, and you just sit and you laugh. But if he hadn't lived it, he wouldn't have been able to write it.
That's right. That's right. And one of the keys, he said, to making a link to these people that are, in a sense, magical people stepping into his life, is eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You see the window in the other person's eyes. And then the communication can start.
Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Well, I know we're just about out of time, Mars. The website for your husband and his writing and the information about his travels is starbirth.com. Now, that's star with two R's, then birth, S-T-A-R-R, B like boy, I-R-T-H, www.donnaclark.com. It has been just a delight. The book is fascinating, and it is so rich with description, with humor, with real-life stories, including one about an iguana that really should be read. It's got wisdom from front to back, but it's about real life, real people. And Wayne Steyer was a real man, and his wife, Mars Powers, is with us today because he passed away a year and a half ago. Stars When the Sun Shines, a superb book that will enable you to enter into a world of experience that a man lived and have fun in the journey and not have to deal with the bugs. This is Donna.
Yes.
I had to throw that in. I always know what it's like in the tropics.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome, Mars.
And I hope people find out about the title and its source, Coming from a Conversation with an Aboriginal Man.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a wonderful way to end this our conversation. Stars When the Sun Shines. This is Donna Seaborg and my guest, Mars Cavers. The website, star with two R's, birth.com. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Wow, I'll tell you, Old Man Fall is beginning to do his tap dance out of the season here in the Pacific Northwest. There's snow in the mountains, and the winds are blowing furiously, so all of the beautiful colored leaves that we've had here are going to be sent to the ground fairly quickly. And it has just been pouring here. We've just had incredible storms coming through, 60-mile-an-hour winds. But that's what happens this time of the year in the Pacific Northwest, at least in our neighborhood anyhow. And so it really makes you aware winter's not all that far away. You know, when I was talking about Wayne Steyer's book, Stars When the Sun Shines, I came across a poem that he wrote. And I was mentioning to our engineer when we were on break, it just seems like when you travel, at least for me, I blink and a month is gone. And I'll go, wow, can't we put things on pause? And Wayne had written this story about the Time Savings Bank. Actually, it's a poem. And I wanted to share it with you because I loved his approach. And I thought it's something that maybe we need to listen to. And this is how it reads. Time Savings Bank. They've stolen all the time that we have saved and hid it in a time vault like a grave. We're going to need a very clever sleuth to discover and uncover the whole truth. What becomes of all those precious seconds? Are they hidden in a vault and then forgotten? We saved up so much time in drive-through lines and scarfing food while driving saves more time. And then we speed, although it is a crime, just so that we arrive and just in time. Where are all those seconds that we shaved? Where are all those minutes that we saved? We're living twice as much on double time without a reason and without a rhyme and muddled and befuddled time engulfed. Where's the bank that keeps the hidden vault? My account for saving time is in default. Up to the teller I will firmly walk and state, I wish to make a full withdrawal of all my extra hours laid away and spend them smelling flowers all the day. I'll open up my savings time account and withdraw the whole entire full amount, all that the savings bankers will allow. I'll spend it all with interest. With interest on now. Quite a profound poem. It is a delight to be with you today. I want to let you know also about the guests that are coming up this week. We're going to be talking about vegetables. Four ingredient vegan dishes. But if you're a person that likes vegetables the way I do, Mary Beth Adams is a lady you are going to want to hear about because she's going to have some fabulous recipes. And of course, the holidays are coming up, and it's always good to know different ways to fix vegetables. And if you've got kids at home or even adult kids that say, I don't like veggies, well, this may give you something different to work with. And I think it's so healthy for us, too. It really is, because vegetables contain so many wonderful, wonderful nutrients. And then on the 27th, Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Tommy Spaulding, Not Just Who You Know, is this book. It's very insightful about how we can move forward with success. And you'll hear the adage, it's who you know that enables you to get ahead. Not what you know, but who you know. But that's not necessarily the case. So we're going to find out some points of information to make us more aware. And then Margaret Hawkins is going to be with us on Thursday. How We Got Barb Back is a fabulous book. It's about her sister. And her sister had schizophrenia. Mental illness is a subject that frequently is just not discussed in so-called proper company. And it's a sad thing because it is a reality. And there's so many different expressions of it. And schizophrenia is one. By the way, they're discovering a lot of things medically about schizophrenia, and they are finding that it may even be related to some kind of an infectious virus or bacteria affecting the brain. All kinds of things are going on, but we're going to be hearing about Barbara, the sister of Margaret Hawkins. Now, Friday, we're going to have an open mic day. What does that mean? It means you're going to be able to call in at any time during the hour and chat with me if you so desire. So that is the lineup for this week. And, oh, boy, we're going to have a terrific following week, but we'll just have to wait to find out about that. I know we're coming close to the end of this month. How does it go by so quickly? Halloween is just around the corner, and there are so many things going on, and I hope that you are going to have an absolutely awesome time getting ready for your own special happening. Oh, yes, whether it's dressing up like a black cat or a witch, which is one of the favorite costumes that people like to wear, then you're going to have a great time. And I was listening to a talk show host when I was out and about busily doing errands, having been gone so much on the road. This month, I was taking care of a lot of things that I've not been able to take care of. Listening to this talk show host talking about how, when she was growing up, that in her town, there had been an incident where a kid in costume and wearing a mask had been chased by a dog, ended up running out into a street, and got hit by a car. Well, the car was not going very fast. The child, fortunately, was not injured. But the people of the town, instead of saying, we'll sue, and all this kind of stuff, they said, you know, this could happen again. How can we have a Halloween that's a lot of fun? So the people in this small town decided they were going to have parties, and they were going to have parties for different age groups. And the trick-or-treating pretty much had been put into a whole different context. Instead of take the kids going all around the neighborhoods like I remember doing when I was growing up, they all got goodies at the parties that were attended, and teenagers were in their own element. They could have so much fun at their parties. They had contests for costumes and this type of thing. And, of course, it was all supervised, and the parents felt a lot happier. The whole community really enjoyed the fact that the kids were not out on the streets and that they were being supervised and that fun could be had by all, including the adults. So that's just a suggestion. If you're in a community and if you're like some people that I've been hearing complaints from regarding Halloween, they said, we just don't like it having the older kids coming around. It's all right when the little toddlers and little ones come around. It's fun. They're cute. But when you see someone that's 6'4" standing at your door saying trick or treat, that's not too exciting. Well, just realize there may be some other options that can be worked with. And the different age groups enjoy different things. But I really think having a community activity where the youngsters of the area are welcome to come in, have a good time, and the adults and the children, can interact, I think it's just an absolutely wonderful experience. So I just thought I'd share it with you because that is what one woman's opinion was, and she said she just feels that that is absolutely a fabulous way to keep things sort of on the safe side, have a good time, and have a memorable holiday. Halloween has always been one of my favorite holidays. Now, by the way, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some information with you about invasive species. I was watching on one of the Nature Channels last night stories about how different critters have evolved throughout the world, mankind including. Yes, we're considered a critter too. And I thought this information is quite interesting because just about every country has had different species of different critters, that's a Donna word, come into their space that was not there before. I can remember traveling to Hawaii, and you were screened very, very carefully. They didn't want snakes on the island. They had become endowed with mosquitoes because of sailors many, many, many years before, or a century or two before, that had left a cask of polluted water loaded with mosquito larvae. And, of course, the mosquito got out their little suitcases and said, "Woo, tropical paradise, this is home." So they were able to come in. Also, the situation with the rats on the islands came from ships that came into Hawaiian waters. And then when they tried to get rid of the rats, they thought the mongoose was going to do it. So they bring over the mongoose, and then the mongoose and the rat never meet company because one's a night critter and the other one's a day critter. So that was an interesting situation, and it affected a lot of the land birds that were on the Hawaiian islands, and they basically had disappeared on for all respects. So there's all kinds of things that occur that bring new species into environments, and for those people living in the environments, it can sometimes really end up being an agitation. The rock dove, well, we've all seen them. The doves are a native of Europe, North Africa, and Asia, and it was introduced to the United States in 1606. Now, we see it everywhere today. You see it in New York City. You see it in Los Angeles. We see it here in Seattle. It is so common. And, of course, people enjoy feeding the birds. Well, they cause a lot of damage with their droppings. Because it'd get on architecture, they perch up in different places. And I can remember when I was in Russia, they had all kinds of netting over the tops of certain historical buildings so that the birds wouldn't drop their poop on that. And then how about the lowly rat? Yes, well, I don't know that lowly is the proper term to use with a rat, The Norway rat, which we have had the experience of here in the Pacific Northwest, they are hardy, and they get to be quite sizable. And they were unintentionally introduced. Yes, they have their little suitcases, and they love to travel, too. They came in on ships from Europe, and little by little, they managed to make their way across the country. So many different species of insects and animals do throughout history. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When I come back, a few more points of information, and I'm debating, should I give you a recipe on how to fix a yummy, yummy melt-in-the-mouth cheesecake that won't put 55 inches on your hips? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll share it with you. So have that pad of paper and pen handy, and when we come back, we'll find out how you fix a delicious, creamy, yummy cheesecake, low in calories. Uh-huh. It's true. It can be done. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. We do have a caller waiting on the line, so keep that pen and pad of paper handy, or give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Donna?
Yes.
Hi, Donna. It's Pat from Connecticut.
Oh, hi, Pat. Now, you have to refresh my memory. Where are you in Connecticut?
In New Haven.
New Haven. All right.
And,
now, go ahead.
And yes, the leaves are pretty beautiful about right now.
Oh, I'm glad you still got yours. Ours are disappearing. We've got winds that are going anywhere from 20 miles an hour up to 60 miles an hour. And as I'm looking out the window, there's beams of sunshine that decided to bless and grace our gray day, which is just absolutely awesome. And the next thing I see is storm. Coming through, and rain coming down by buckets. But that's all. You know, that's what we are in the Northwest. That's what keeps everything green.
That'll be a nice night.
Oh, it's going to be fabulous. Absolutely
fabulous.
Temps are dropping. All right, let's get down to business with you, Pat. First thing I'm looking at is a legal document of some kind. When I'm looking at this legal document, I'm really surprised that you would even be stressed over it, because apparently things are pretty clear-cut. But there is a money issue that I'm seeing associated with this document, and I think you're just uncomfortable. You're saying to yourself, gee whiz, I've really got to watch the pennies here. Should I do this? Should I not do this? And you're going over things in your mind. And what I want you to do is have a little bit of faith. And I'm not saying this to be Pollyannish. I'm saying it because you've been through this scenario so many times in your life. You know you're going to get through it. Whatever responsibilities you choose to take on, you're going to be able to handle it. You just need to be able to look at the facts and assess them clearly, and then let the rest of the stuff work its way through. because apparently this is something necessary. You're not going out and investing in a Maserati here. So it's just very practical, down-to-earth perspective that you need, and you're going to be just fine. So be patient. But this is a financial responsibility that you're looking at, and I can understand your stress, dear, but you really are dealing with something practical here, not a bunch of fluff. So you can work it through. Do you have a question for me?
Thank you so much, Donna. You're always so right on. It's amazing what you get. Yes, I do. I've talked to you before about getting a dog, and the last time you pointed out, why do I need to go far to get one? Look locally. But there is one that it's in New Jersey, but they will bring her to me. Her name is Queen Anne. And I pretty much feel okay about her as much as I can because there's only one photo online and it's small.
Mm-hmm.
So visually, I can't get too much intuitively. Just wondering what you see.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think Queen Anne is absolutely a doll baby, but she's got a constitution and a will of steel. So this little person is someone that is going to have consistent and patient discipline and training so that she will be consistent in behavior. How old is she?
They say around 2.
All right. You're going to need to be aware that this little person is very intelligent, has a mind of her own, and think carefully before she agrees to do anything.
Okay. That's all terrific. And I'm interested in training and also interested in a very intelligent dog. I'm used to that with hounds. As long as the only problem I might have with rescuing a dog or even I'm concerned about the initial coming here might destroy my house, which has happened before, from anxiety, being left alone.
Well, I think with this dog that there needs to be the bonding, but if you have someone that can be supportive with you and this animal, I don't think that this animal needs to be destructive at all. How big
needs
is this
what?
Dog going to be?
You don't think the animal needs what?
How big is this animal?
Oh, well, I would guess anywhere between 50 and 65 pounds.
All right. This is an animal that is going to need to have, I think, supervision and companionship for the first 6 months that you own this dog.
Mm-hmm.
And with that and with good training, I don't think you need to be concerned. Do you have
okay.
a yard where this animal can go in and out?
No, I don't. I will walk her twice a day and sometimes, you know, an hour's walk up a mountain, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give her a lot of exercise, and I tend to bring my dogs with me whenever I can. I get very close to them, so bonding won't be an issue either.
Well, I would encourage you, see if you can find a friend that can help you work with a dog.
Okay.
So that there will be that sense of security. And if you have someone that's willing to be a dog sitter, and I think you don't give the animal the run of the house. You just don't
okay.
in the beginning. You just don't do that. But this is a dog. It will take about 6 months and get as much
okay.
history on the animal as you possibly can.
Okay.
Get as much history.
I only have a little.
Well, when the people are bringing the dog out, say, I want as much history as possible,
okay.
because the more history you have, the better it is. I remember
okay.
adopting a Scotty, and the person did not give me information that when somebody approached my car, that it could be trashed by the dog, because that's
okay.
what the dog had been allowed to do. Now, this dog did not ever do that in my car, but I had a slight bit of damage, and I was stunned when it happened. but she was very defensive about an automobile. So you don't need to do that. You don't need to go there. No surprises. Get as much information as you can.
Okay. Do you
and, hon, I've
crate?
Got to go. I'm sorry, Pat. I'm sorry, but I'm out of time, dear.
Okay, thank you.
You're very Bye-bye. Welcome. I'm sorry I had to cut you off like that, but my goodness, we are out of time. This hour has just flown by like the wind. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted that you were able to share this time with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We're going to have a good time talking food tomorrow, and I will give that cheesecake recipe out. So hope you join me tomorrow. Donna Sebo here. Have a fabulous, fabulous day or evening wherever you are. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.